Lost my heart and hope to die. If I ever, ever told a lie, feelings and guilty just said, choose a bad place when you're dead. Washington, he never lied.
Hello and welcome back to our podcast, but a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is a synthesis of Follow, the popular game about a post-apocalyptic wasteland, and My Little Pony, a popular show about pastel horses. Hi, I'm Fi. I'm joined once again with my co-host, Weird. Say hello, Weird.
I, Sir Weirdington Esquire, greet you and the audience. I have yet to decide which of these two factors is more important to my attention. Audience, you have a leg up. I, Sir Weirdington Esquire, am a little excited for this episode, and not in the positive connotation, not in the positive sense of that word, because I've been given forewarning. Fi has, as he occasionally does, told me yesterday that this one promises to make me real mad.
Yeah, like, I don't know how mad, but it's definitely going to make you mad.
So this is a chilling forecast, because in the past, every time he has said this, the same sequence of events occurs. I immediately reflexively go, we're like halfway through this goddamn thing. We're so many episodes in. We're well past three dozen episodes in. There's nothing that could surprise me. Like, I'm surely burnt out by this point. Like, what could possibly, anger is arguably, and it has been argued, is psychologically very closely connected to fear. And so that requires like some degree of a surprise response. Can't possibly. I'm sure he's exaggerating. He's misjudging me. And then every episode that like was predicted to enrage me does so. I
like incredibly.
And like sometimes he'll say like, okay, this one's going to be a boring one. And like last week's episode,
we realized that 21 is the worst forever.
Shit to talk about. To be fair, it's the only thing that was worth noting from that entire, like, session. Like, okay, Pip has a new respiratory system. Blackjack has a fresh coat of paint. Has had her hide, has had a new hide strapped back onto her. But, like, the thing really of note is that, fucking, P21... has like a tragic backfill, not backstory, backfill. Like he is retroactively given pathos. Apparently, he's been sneaking sedatives this entire time. He's an opiate fiend. Somehow, inexplicably, I guess his rogue levels are just so high. That he's been able to pocket huge amounts of it and hide it in his invisible solid snake inventory space, I guess. And taking just low enough amounts of it to, like, maintain an addiction, and yet not enough to display any, what you call them, symptoms of drug use or dependency. But we find this out because, so, you know, there are certain levels of pain where your body, like, will go into shock and kill you. Dying of, chlorine.
Chlorine is absolutely one of those.
I guess, kind of content warning, I'm going to go over briefly why chlorine gas is bad. So what it does is it interacts with water to produce acid. And you know what's in your throat? So it turns
sure
as
ain't powder.
turns all of the fluids in your throat into hydrochloric acid. Uses the hydrogen in the water in your throat to make hydrochloric acid, and that floods down your throat, filling it with legions, probably tearing it open, and into your lungs. That alone is lethally painful if it weren't drowning you. You drown in blood and acid is what happens. And due to magic, fucking inventory space. What's her name again?
Scotch tape.
Her throat is magically producing chlorine on its own. So yeah, while she is going through that, her deadbeat dad, who we're given to understand, like, up until finding out he had a living daughter who, like, could do with, like, more people in her life to, like, reassure her and comfort her through these dark times. He's all about family and like he idolizes all of these things until they become his responsibilities. And he's been blowing her off and blowing her off until he decides to steal her life-saving painkillers. For this, not only does our sainted hero, Blackjack, immediately forgive him, she is, over the course of that last chapter, incidentally flirting with him a lot. And just at the very moment he proves himself least appropriate to have anything to do with her, the honorable thing at this point would be to keep that secret to himself for all time. This incredible crime against this little girl finally earns P21 in the eyes of the author in the story the redemptive chance to let her into his life. And that's about the only thing of substance that happened last week. Everything else was retreads of stuff that we'd seen before. Fucking nihilist Clippy continues to be an ass. But more so than ever now that he's not even a cool ghost. He's seems to be some dipshit who's trapped inside of the Maltese.exe. Who, like, expressed last chapter that he literally wants the worst for everyone, basically. Like, he's just rooting for the worst conceivable outcome for everyone involved. Yeah.
It's got real boomer energy.
Rainbow Dash is still struggling with her
her boring ass. Yeah, I was gonna say her boring ass identity complex.
If that sentence didn't make any sense, listen to the rest of the podcast, you weird pervert. Like you're coming in pretty late for this to be your first episode. Yeah, that's about it. So
now it's my turn. To catch us up with the next chapter.
Let's find out how mad I'm gonna get.
Yeah, let's find out.
How mad could it possibly be?
You're either gonna be exhausted by this revelation, you're going to be mad. It's one of the two. We're either gonna get a defeated sure or like mad yelling that I have to like clip fix. That's the dichotomy of weird. But yeah, anyways, we're on to chapter 41, Paths, also known as the useless double run back episode. So I've been told a lot by my Discord that I need to explain terms better. This one hasn't been asked about, but I feel like run back is enough of a potentially confusing term, because I've only ever heard it come from one other place, which is just simply just another term for retconning something, but even more cowardly sounding, because it literally sounds like you're literally running back to go fix the problem. But we're getting a double run back episode. Yay! This chapter starts off with BJ, Psychoshy, and Rampage going to the store to get 21 more drugs because they're completely out of painkillers and he's starting to have, like, detox fits.
Okay, all right, need a little context. Remind us where we are, like where the fuck geographically
they are. They're at the
in the greater Hoofington metropolitan area.
they're in the Fluttershy Medical Clinic, which is a area they visited way earlier in the story. That was where all the kids were like evil, and they had to kill them by turning off their life support machines. They've been using this as a temporary base while they've been trying to fix people using medical science. So they are going out to go get supplies now because apparently the hospital has been completely raided of any medical supplies by this point. There's a lot of back and forth that I just didn't even bother writing down. A huge chunk of this chapter is dominated by Psychoshy being in the party and just being like, what are you going to do now? And she's like, I don't know. My whole life was based off of, like, helping this guy. And it's really just a chapter her involvement in the chapter is to showcase how cool and magnanimous Blackjack is to her. There's literally a part in it where Rampage just has a speech about how cool Blackjack is because we needed another one of those. But yeah, they talk about the future. We also get a breakdown of a future plot point called the Highlanders, who are another gang out there who are basically all inbred hillbillies who are tougher and nastier and meaner than any of the other gangers outside of the Reapers.
That is no longer a high bar.
No, it's not. It's meant to be in this, but yeah. Like, they make a point about, like, oh, the Highlanders never joined the Reapers because, like, Big Daddy and their chief, White Lightning, had a big old slobberknocker for 3 days, and then they just, like, decided, like, let's just truce. And that was the end of the conflict between them.
I gotta pseudo hand it to Somber on this one, because this is the, like... Actually, wait a minute, I don't have to hand him anything. I'm shitting on him, because this is precisely the kind of bad writing that you see in Saturday morning cartoons, where, whoops, we've, villain decay has gone out of control, we've flanderized, like, the what was supposed to be the biggest and the baddest, time to roll in a new biggest and the baddest, who has been the biggester and baddester this entire time, we promise.
But it's the Dragon Ball Z problem. We made one of our villains the Space Emperor. So next week we have to have the double Space Emperor. Well, the Highlanders were mentioned before in passing as one of the gangs, but yeah, this is just so that when they show up later, they can be big and Scottish and invincible and. Overall, just
those are three characteristics combined that I'm 100% in favor of. But right now, it's just
blinding you with rage.
I'm still low key.
So before we move on, I've been elucidated on I should explain what a slobberknocker is because I've been saying it a lot around here on the fanfic podcast. We sure do like comparing things to wrestling, because as far as I'm concerned, wrestling is the platonic ideal of storytelling. When you're talking about, like, stories that can't go back and edit themselves. So in the case of a slobberknocker is an old term, an old JR term that is just a fight that is a ridiculous, dragged out, absolute haggling fight. Between characters, it's the kind of fight where by the end of the fight, both participants are so gassed that they're kind of just like impotently slapping each other. trying to get the other one to fall over.
Out of gas, like,
yeah, completely out of steam. They Live is a movie which contains a slobber knocker in it between the main actor of Roddy Roddy Piper and Keith David, and it's kind of amazing and stupid. I think it's Keith David. If I'm wrong, whatever. I'm pretty sure it's Keith David, though. It's a battle to exhaustion, essentially. And I find those appealing from time to time when it's because it helps really sell, like, how tough a particular set of characters are, that they, like, can't kill each other and they just beat on each other so hard that they're just completely out. But anyways, that's a slobber knocker. Moving along, before they go to where they're going, they decide to head to one of the, like, radio towers that exists throughout the area that, like, Homage is connected to, who's DJ Pwn3, who's DJ Human in our metafiction, who is a character from the original story. And this is when we get to hit the dumb, divisive thing in the community that I get to complain about for 2 seconds. So a huge chunk of this chapter is dedicated to late in Fall Equestria. There is a complicated scene in which, in the original story, the main character is assumed to have gone off the deep end because she killed the town, and it was like a really friendly town, so everyone thought that she went evil. And then it's, you know, revealed that she killed a bunch of cannibals who've been preying upon the local traders in the area. So first of all, this story has nothing but bad takes about it that aren't even really worth repeating. It's the same kind of meandering bullshit that everybody else brings up with this topic. Because this is a big base breaker in this community, whether or not Pip's actions are considered justified in killing a bunch of cannibals.
I have bad news for you, Fi. For the purpose of our podcast, we've got to discuss what Somber thought of it. Like, what in the text of Project Horizons, what does it have to say?
It makes a bunch of boring, meandering, unengaged takes that essentially boil down to, it's whatever. Like, well, she's gone off the deep end. Like, maybe she's really is evil, and maybe that, like, this is a bridge too far. And it's because it exists in a weird state where the characters can't know why she did it, so they just have to speculate on, like, whether or not it was a good action in the first place to do. And it kind of falls under the, like, same meandery centrist bullshit, like, opinion that everybody else seems to have about this moment, where they believe that, like, yes, killing cannibals is bad, but you killed a whole town of friendly people who were cannibals, which is bad, and so therefore it's a morally gray sentiment, when, like, it's not. They were eating people for years before Pip showed up and killed them all. Like, I don't know. This is a call out of my own fucking audience. If you're an Arbu apologist, fuck you. You're bad. You have wrong fucking opinions. Fuck you and you're dumb.
This is quite the hill for Somber to die on. Divinely anointed protagonist is literally Christly protagonist has killed people for way less,
but it's considered the hangering, like the hand wringing moment of the community. It's the, oh well, I think she went a little too aggressive with killing these people.
Well, so I'm interested in divorced from that, assuming that I have no knowledge of this controversy, and I don't. please make it clear to me and the audience what the fuck happens in Project Horizon surrounding this. So they get word that this town is gone.
Yeah, they get, like, they see, they basically watch a bunch of camera footage in a radio tower. About, like, they see it happen, but it's like it's contextless camera footage, so they, like, just assume that little Pip killed the town, and a lot of the chapter is just almost refuses to make an opinion one way or the other. It just simply like goes like, oh, I don't know if she should have done that, and I think that seems to be the sum like amount of it.
Okay. So that is kind of an interesting note. Our story stops for pages, presumably, so that our protagonists can stop in the middle of what they're doing, to muse upon the actions of this total stranger. Oh no! Wait, no, they know her now. Like they've met.
So they've kissed, for fuck's sakes.
I know what you got with way back, Superman. This would be weird. to a total outside observer. Like, if I were forced to just read this on my own, and I did not have the strength, and none of you should try and find it within you to do so either, I'd be confused.
Without greater context, yeah, I guess to roll back, without greater context of the original story, if you're just reading this one for whatever fucking reason you're doing so, this scene would be fucking weird to show up in. Because it's basically like, it's almost like a weird, like, it'd be like if, like, a Batman story stopped in the middle of it to just talk about Superman. Like, there's a same story happening this month that's in a Superman comic that is just like, and Batman just completely shifts gears and spends a bunch of time like just hand-wringing about like what Superman's up to.
I guess the nearest equivalent is like the contents of one of those like those famous Superman covers wherein Superman is depicted as a massive tool bag. And
oh yeah,
the reason is that like the context of the actual comic inside, like, give like means that like this is in nowhere near as crazy as it's being made out to be, because like people see, okay, a cover with Superman being an evil like crazy monster, that's not super. So, like, what's happening? Let me buy this to find out. It would be basically a Batman comic wherein like 4 of the 24 pages is just Batman like looking at only the cover,
the Superman
of a different Superman comic.
Yes. For those that aren't initiated with this like hilarious phenomenon, I implore you to look up Super Dickery, which is a catalog of all of the weird Superman covers that existed back in the day. Many of them are amazing. Most of them involve Superman killing Jimmy Olsen, his like sidekick, for no reason. But yeah, it's an odd, within the context of this story, it's odd to do, but it's almost a weird meta attempt. It's like it's a meta moment where the author gets to come into the story and like put their two pieces onto the port, their opinion on on it happening, but it's weirder than that because the characters can't know the full context, because if they knew the full context, they know that Pip wasn't doing anything that was like any crazier than anything that happened in Project Horizons. But like the author still wants to put their two cents in about it and try to use this as kind of like a thematic tool to like sell the idea of like, oh, well, you know, even heroes start becoming monsters when, you know, the whole like, you either die a hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. But like, the greater context of this is that that's not what's happening here, because it's not, that's like basically what's happening to the little Pip is completely fake news. Like, she gets, a bunch of people get told a bunch of stories about her and everyone believes that she's gone off the deep end, which just isn't the case. Like, she kind of is, but not to the extent that it's being projected as. And that's being filtered into this story. So, but like, it's weird, you know, like the author knows something but the characters know something, but the characters are still puppeting the opinions of the author on the subject all the same. If that makes any sense.
Yeah.
The long story short is it's an absolute clusterfuck that shouldn't really... I don't know, it doesn't necessarily even be need to be in this, but, like, you know, that's Project Horizons for you. But, yeah, it's a lot of this chapter just is the way it is. But, yeah, my long and skinny of it to my audience is, if you're an ARPU apologist, I hate you personally. You suck. You're the worst parts of the community. But, yeah, that happens. They talk to Homage a bit, and they basically, like, because Blackjack has to, like, have, like, has to inspire every single character to, like, have their opinions that they do, inspires Homage to trust Little Pip, even though she, like, looks like she's gone evil, because your super special OC has to come in and, like, give everyone their cool ideas. But, yeah, here's where we get to the like, meat and potatoes of this stupidity. So Blackjack goes back to Mega Mart. To go buy painkillers. This is important, because if we remember, nigh even two chapters ago, Mega Mart
very very intentionally silent. Yeah, Mega Mart burned to the ground. was burned to the ground, specifically by people looking to hurt Blackjack by doing so. Like, And like, what, like, a dozen or so yahoos band together to take down Mega Mart. But, yeah, okay, so last we heard about Mega Mart, it was burned to the ground.
Yes. We are now finding out that in fact, didn't happen. Because they show up...
Hear about it, or did we actually see the ruins of the Mega Mart?
No, we heard about it. Okay. But we were told, what we were told was a whirlwind tour of atrocity being committed by Sanguine, where he went to, like, everywhere that BJ has gone and fucked with them personally. And now we're being taught that didn't happen, except for the Rock Crusher scene, where, like, everyone got murdered there. So we go to Mega Mart. And they're like, huh, Mega Mart's not as dead as we immediately expected, as a moment to lampshade it, because, you know, lampshading fixes everything. But yeah, the only thing that has changed is there's now a hole in the ceiling, and the gun has completely been destroyed. So even the one kind of neat thing about the Mega Mart...
Silence for the gun.
Yes. Death to the false gun.
My heart will go on. Rendition on Kazoo.
In the arms of an angel, but on Kazoo. But yeah, they show up there. Everyone goes hostile on Psycho Shy, because the last time she was there, she tried to kill everybody. Which she gets shot with beanbags for her efforts. There's a admittedly kind of aesthetically interesting change to Mega Mart here, though, that, like, as opposed to the, like, Mega Mart being, like, you know, weird barter town with Walmart aesthetics, all of the, like, Mega Mart employees and Bottle Cap herself are now, like, decked out in heavy armor and have proper guns now, as opposed to being, like, just, like, fucking, like, like Walmart wearing, like, blue shirts.
It's so much worse than Oblivion. It's been bleached.
Yes.
It's been drained of all context and interest.
Yeah.
A terrible, like, fate.
Like, I think it's aesthetically interesting from the perspective of, like, oh, every town has gotten worse in a bunch of shitty authoritarian ways. But, like, ultimately, like, this is a good thing, like, because, like we've talked about before, like, Flank is punished for its hedonism by becoming, like, murderous raiders who, like, fiend for drugs, so they become literally known as the Fiends because of it, because they liked drugs and sex and didn't, and was wary of this authoritarian thug showing up and, like, disposing them. But, you know, whatever.
Oh, so it's framed as this is an improvement?
Well, not really, but like it still is. Like it's the part, like I was discussing this about, but like before, like we were talking about, like talking on the Discord about Watchmen, and that's not really important. But we were talking about like how like aesthetics and intent don't always match up. Like the clear intent here is supposed to be that like, oh no, it's bad because the Megamart is becoming more authoritarian and militarized, and it showcases like how like the degree of safety any settlement has is getting smaller and smaller as the Waste is getting more dangerous, and the Hoof specifically is getting more dangerous. Like it's supposed to be like a show of rampancy of like threat. It's supposed to be like, you know, things are getting serious now. But the problem is the way it actually presents it is Blackjack unites all of these factions under one final coalition to have her big anime war arc by the end of this. So the militarization of Megamart is ultimately a good thing because eventually they're going to have to go to war. In the same case of making allies with the Reapers and not decimating them, making allies with the Rangers and not completely decimating them, making like basically every faction that can help her is becoming slowly militarized and authoritative. And that's supposed to be a bad thing, but right up until it isn't, because it becomes like united under a coalition of Blackjack, I guess. I don't know. It looks bad even when it's trying to make a point about like it being like a problem. Like it's trying to make a point, but that point kind of falls flat for me, knowing that it doesn't amount to much. Like it's not like it's not as if all these places becoming authoritative and totalitarian fascist states is ultimately a bad thing, because it all gets solved by the end anyways by Blackjack. Like it doesn't it's kind of just it's a bummer, I guess. Sometimes I don't know how to end sentences, so just go and that's terrible.
So they come back to find it largely intact, but painfully less interesting,
which could like describe this whole story. well, like that was the thing. I was like, I was like, I'm actually almost surprised you're not more frustrated with this as I am. That like it can't even commit to the story can't even commit to story shrinkage. Like it does all stuff to like eliminate everything, and then even that doesn't matter.
Do they make an effort to lampshade? Oh, okay. It turns out Sanguine was such a useless piece of shit. He had to lie about like the degree to which he devastated these places in order to like inflate his personal threat. It's not having that big an impact on me, mainly because like, okay, it does make a kind of sense, especially given how pathetic we now know Sanguine was, that the level of carnage and damage he was doing to the setting was all
all incidental.
That it just makes an intuitive sense to me that, oh look, he was ever more dipshit than we ever gave him credit for.
he was such a loser. He couldn't even kill a whole town, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I suppose.
And also it makes me like it's a worthwhile fix, because like Man Oh Man was like the thing that it's fixing, hella super intolerable, because remember like one of my biggest like complaints was like the Megamart should not be this easy to like erase. It just shouldn't. Like, how the fuck did they accomplish this with like a dozen guys? And I guess the answer to that is, instead, I suppose we can be frustrated that like, how the fuck did any of them survive? like get far enough in to like cause any meaningful havoc?
Yeah, how did they blow up the gun and then just went like, nah?
And honestly, like, ah, fuck. All right, now I can be angry again, because like it really does.
Hooray!
In Elysium, they are guarded against it. Like, why would they change their behavior because somebody struck them? And again, like, it's not. It shouldn't even be their problem. It should be the like like a coalition of various forces are now like doubling their like tribute to the Mega Mart's like broader security and the what the fuck are they called? The Retributors? The assholes who are working with Sombra on this should all have like huge bounties on them. Like the priority should be making an example of the morons who came and attacked the Elysium.
Yeah. Well, they do establish that like why they can't do anything is because like the Finders are super scattered and crippled because they lost a bunch of their like other power bases. Like they don't have, they lost Paradise completely to Red Eye's forces. Flank doesn't exist anymore really, and Megamart's the only thing standing. And that like there's a dumb thing that kind of establishes that like because like we like there was a whole like Kingmaker storyline with Bottle Cap and her sisters as like an aside thing, where like who's going to be the next queen of the Finders, basically, like who's going to run Bartertown, and like it just falls to Bottle Cap, not through like any like shrewd mercantile ability of her own. It's just that all of her like competitors were wiped out by like dumb happenstance. Like that, I'm not even necessarily mad about that. It's just, it's like really funny to me about this. Like, it doesn't like why am I supposed to care about anything when like nothing feels like it makes any sense? I don't know. I also think that like Megamart is also frustrating because like it just kind of exists to be like a weird expository town. Like every time it shows up, like Bottle Cap just shows up to be like, "Hey, Blackjack, you gotta top you up on all of the backstory that you've been missing." While you're out exploring the dungeons, like she establishes that like, oh no, the Harbingers are definitely for realsies more dangerous than like Deus and his bounty hunters coming for you because they're properly well armed. We get teased the idea that they have guns that can punch through armor specifically to fight Blackjack. But yeah, but like other than that, like I don't know, like the Finders are such like such a non-entity in this faction story, but like I don't know, like. Bottle Cap also like gives Blackjack another side quest, and like it's like, well, we gave you the side quest last time to go fuck up Paradise's slave trade, but like Paradise is still around, which is the like the town that like the slaving came from. So like if you ever are around that area, go like wipe them out for us, please and thank, so that we can establish more trade areas. Please do all my dirty work for me again. But we also get told our next location, like, improper. I've been teasing this for the last couple of chapters about, like, hey, we gotta go on the quest again. We're going to a next location. We're heading to a place called Hightower, which we get, like, a bunch of some teasers of Hightower. That it's, like, a prison that's been, like, has an automated lockdown on it that's been going on for 200 years. So no one can get in or out of the building because it's just a giant death trap. And it also, like, a mega spell hit it directly, so the whole building is like super irradiated and super deadly. Everything about it screams high level dungeon area, so nobody wants to go near it. But yeah, that's our next location. Yay! It takes so long to get to Hightower, and there's so much shit in it. But anyways, they leave Megamart is what I almost said there. Macklemart.
The Macklemart.
The Macklemart.
The Macklemart.
That totally place that exists. But yeah, when they leave the building, they fight Harbingers for a while, which just kind of like, Harbingers are super boring for a huge chunk of this because they essentially replace all our raider conflicts and all of our just general ganger conflicts by just having like them show up whenever there's like downtime. Whenever there's transition areas between one location and another, they fight Harbingers for a lot.
Harbingers added to the random encounters table.
Yep, exactly. They're the high level. It Blackjack has hit high enough level that like now the like general world level has caught up to her, and the location spawns are now more difficult. But, yes. Well, that was the thing I was complaining about before. Like, they also, like, a huge chunk of them have anti-machine rifles. Anti-machine rifles in this are anti-material rifles in real life, which are guns that are designed to punch through tanks. These are directly to counter blackjack. And I complained about this before, but like blackjack doesn't even really get enough time to use her cybernetics in a cool way for the most part before they're immediately nerfed by like the setting getting more deadly and dangerous. Like, and this happens consistently. Like, oh, we can't. Oh, your main character becomes a cyborg. Well, good thing all of the heroes have anti, like all the villains have anti cyborg guns. It's just stories about Kryptonite are actually super boring in my opinion, because having just like the anti character thing immediately show up does like means that you don't get enough time to actually like push the character and make them get to do anything cool for any amount of time. Like the sort of like bog standard thing in like anime is the training montage. Like the immediate fight after the training montage is watching the hero do a cool thing, because you get to see like the results of all that training. And it's just like similarly, like
face them up against like some wrestling terminology again, booking.
Yes.
If you wanna push your character as having gotten stronger, you book them against somebody who like bodied them before. You book them against somebody who wrestling term tomato can them. And a tomato can is an inanimate object full of red stuff that spills everywhere when you hit it. you line them up against somebody who previously tomato canned them, and they turn the tables, like let them no sell everything that person handed to them previously. Like you give them a push, you demonstrate to the audience the raise in stakes, the raise in scale, that like, okay, look how badass our hero is now. And whoops, okay, yeah, now that we've firmly established in the audience's mind, they've seen our baby face, our protagonist, our hero, the one you root for, as being crazy powerful, and now there is context for how crazy powerful their new rival is. You've seen our hero push through things that we've previously established as powerful and terrifying, like they were nothing. But now these new baddies, the new rival, the new heel, has stuff that's even stronger than that. But as it stands, we're in like, okay, you tell us that our protagonist is more powerful, but they don't look it. They're never given an opportunity to like demonstrate that in any way. We just have to sort of take your word for it, and past a certain point that gets harder and harder to swallow.
Yeah, the escalation problem becomes too much. Like, I assume that the fight against Brass, like the Manicore horse, is meant to be like kind of our big powerful moment of the hero, like actually fighting somebody and like overcoming them because of their new advantages. But it just like doesn't really feel that way, like because like Blackjack is so neutered by that point because she can't use telekinesis at all because her horn had been severed. And it's taken her a long time to like re-up her just her telekinetic abilities. She's forced to use her like cybernetic stuff, and it just doesn't really like make for like there's not a big sell of like her hide's too tough to bite through, or she's too tough to like knock down really, or anything like that anymore. It's just like, no, she has a katana now, and she like does some dumb katana fighting. And I don't know. I think it's just a bad sell. It just doesn't do enough to make her like. It doesn't make enough to make this justified that like now the rampancy, the escalation of the story has gotten so high that they simply have to fight things that are on their level. Anyways, this is where we get the other infuriating detail though about the Harbingers. So one quick backup that I'm not sure if I explained about this before. We also get told that the Harbingers are being led by a faction leader known as the Prophet, who believes that the core is a god, and they're trying to resurrect their god, whatever, so it's a religious thing, who cares? But yeah, that's our next big bad guy, is the Prophet. But the frustrating thing for me with this fight is like terrible. Like I skim these fights a lot because they're usually very boring. This wasn't isn't bad because Blackjack fights a random NPC who, for some reason, is a more engaging fight than both Brass and Sanguine put together. And I hate that. Like, I hate when a random NPC, like a random nameless character, shows up and for no good reason is a tougher, more engaging fight than two previous ones.
TR-8R.
Sorry?
Oh, I guess it's a dead meme by now, but in Star Wars Episode 7, like a lot of time is given way to like a lightsaber fight with literally a random stormtrooper. Like some stormtrooper like pulls out like a fancy sci-fi riot baton to have a lightsaber fight, and like he is so nameless that the fan community had to name him. his only line of dialogue is "Traitor!"
Oh, yeah.
The gag is that people had since referred to him as TR-8R and come up with a lot of like desperately cobbled fanon about who he is and why this fight why this fight was devoted, why screen time was devoted to this, like the audience, the Star Wars fandom was like basically told by cinematic language that you're supposed to care about this fight, that you're supposed to be emotionally invested. And so the fan community, like for the better part of a decade, I think at this point, has scrambled to like figure out why. Like,
yeah, why we should care. To
retroactively care.
But yeah, she's some random horse who's a true believer in the Harbingers and has bread as a cutie mark. So she bites it hard too. This is another one of those slobber knockers where her and BJ are absolutely taking chunks out of each other. But there's a fun, I always bring up fun combat tricks in the story because they're few and far between. But there is a bit where she like you know pulls a grenade off to go and like goes to like she grabs a grenade to go like huck it at Blackjack, and Blackjack just TKs the pin off of it, so it detonates in her face, which is what ends the fight. As for once, like grenades actually hurt in this story. But then we get a sad moment where she like dies slowly, and Blackjack has to like put her out of her misery and whine about how it's not fair that she has to kill people. But yeah, Godspeed, Bread Horse. You're one of the cool.
Let's spend the next like 45 minutes coming out with Gluten's tragic backstory.
yeah, I love poor Bread Horse.
You were surely important to someone somehow.
Yeah, you probably had a family. You probably had a family that was tragically murdered.
By Blackjack.
By Blackjack. You have a bread cutie mark because it was the only thing you could eat because your family was so starving.
Yeah, she's an avid fan of, what, Peter Kropotkin, I think it is.
fucking March of Bread Horse. But yeah. The rest of this chapter is mostly just there to impress upon how cool and great Blackjack is by being, like, both a murderer but also a magnanimous murderer. There's a kind of fun dialogue moment where, like, they try to, like, where Rampage is trying to, like, use, like, terminology that Psycho Shy would understand to try and get why, like, where BJ is coming from. Like, which is kind of a fun, like you know, cargo cult kind of thing of, like, It's like trying to explain the stable is like it's like a gang, but like your leader isn't voted in from strength. They're there because of nepotism, and trying to like explain the whole system from like a gang perspective is kind of a fun like bit of dialogue between these characters. But yeah, fuck. When they get back to the clinic though, after fighting these Harbingers, they also find out the fucking assholes from before that were like warring over who got to use the technology and that was led them into that going in that quest in the first place are still alive. Like only non-important characters died, I guess, during Sanguine's rampage. At this point, he's been so retroactively reduced in terms of like cool mad scientist. He might as well have like accidentally hit somebody with a rock.
it's just that the joke I made last week is turning increasingly terrifyingly true. That like in death he is being like he's being Marty McFly'd. Like he's like any relevance he ever had to the story is being chipped away bit by bit. He is retroactively having never done anything.
Yes.
That like he has left no scar upon the landscape.
Yeah. And I don't know what end that is. Like, is it to make him more forgivable, or is it to just be like, I didn't like this character and I want you to stop thinking about him? I don't know, because both of those feel just like equally equivalent to me. That like either Sanguine was just not a very well liked character and like wanted to get rid of them for like greener pastures and bigger bad guys. Or is it just I'm trying to make you forgive Sanguine for all of his atrocities? Like it could be either or, and I have no idea.
Never even happened.
Yep. Or if they did happen, they only happened in that one place, and it wasn't really even that bad. God, now I can actually move on to my second page of notes.
It's really taking the shape of a narcissist prayer. Like it didn't happen, and if it did happen, it's not that big a deal.
Yeah. That becomes a very common thread in this. Sanguine is a like I'd say Deus is technically the actual start of this, but Sanguine is sort of an incredibly bad trend of villains like immediately after their defeat being like retroactively made to seem way more like forgivable in their actions regardless of the things that they did.
It's really fun in the case of Deus because like the big part that's supposed to make us think better of him like firmly cements him to have been deeply monstrous.
Yes.
All along
he was a rapist the entire time, but it's okay because he's probably autistic, so you know that cancels itself out. That is still the worst. Like there is a lot of bad shit in the story, but like that is unforgivable. That Sombra wrote that, like, that's so unbelievably disgusting. Anyways, but yeah, we get back to the hospital. And everyone's A-okay. Scotch is back in tip-top form with brand new, better lungs. 21 is still coming down from DTs, but he's stabilized. I guess they're not DTs in the case of whatever. He's having a bad time with withdrawal. There's a really weird out of place scene that I don't quite get during this, where BJ is like trying to find Glory and bumps into a random like reporter horse, basically. Like they're like wildly overprepared for living in the hoof, and they're like skittish, and they have a camera, and their whole thing is they're trying to like they heard word that Rainbow Dash is somewhere around, and they're trying to snap a picture like she's a cryptid. And it's just like a super out of place part of the story that has like I don't think this character ever shows up again, and I don't know what their role is in this outside of just like.
Well, their role is making the like believability of the story and the setting overall even harder to swallow, because we just came away from a long scene wherein fucking. The protagonist tries to explain the concept of a non gang related like political system as though she were like sort of Mad Max like caveman socially degenerated, and now we have a supporter.
Yes.
Completely anachronistic. Something that would only really exist in a society where that's stable enough to contain journalists. And enough commerce to, like, care.
Yeah, I don't know.
It does, I guess, reflect again on the like, weird thing about the setting overall, which is that, like, what apocalypse? like, what is it that we're lacking in? Like, what's scarce? Especially given that, like, we're introduced to this new faction who is replete in anti-tank rounds.
Yes, and good armor and food. Like, which, that was a big thing about Hoofington, is that food is really scarce, even though it never really impacts the main characters in any real significant way. But we're told that food is really scarce and hard to grow, which is why everyone puts up with the society, despite the fact that they own slaves, is because they're the biggest food producer in the setting. And
logistics is super not a problem. they can produce in industrial amounts all this crop, and then like get it to people pretty easily. I don't know. The roads seem well maintained. Like there's like for some reason a moratorium on building boats. Nobody living along this river like has any interest in. Constructing, repairing, or maintaining boats.
Yeah, even, like, non-engined boats. Just, like, a fucking canoe. Nobody's paddling around in a goddamn canoe. There are no horses portaging around. It's, I don't know, it's one of those things where some of this is a little bit understandable because of, like, the really weird adaptational constraints of trying to make a fanfic of a fanfic that itself is, in fact, a synthesis between two properties that have, like, almost nothing to do with each other, at least aesthetically. So you run into this weird problem where, like, in Fallout, nobody has a vehicle because vehicles run on a technology that we can't reproduce very easily anymore. Because everything was nuclear powered in the Fallout universe, because of course it was, because it was a weird 50s like futurism nonsense story, but that was part of its intent. So you lead into these weird adaptational issues where, like, to make it feel like it's Fallout, you have to make a lot of logic sacrifices that don't really work in your setting, depending on what you're doing. Like, yeah, so despite the fact there's huge rivers and rivers would be really big, there's no one that uses boats. And the problem is that instead of just making boats, there's instead a compromise made that just says, oh, well, there's raiders that patrol everywhere on the river that will just gun down boats, so nobody uses a boat, because you'd have to have a boat big enough to have guns on them, and the only person who has that was the Seahorse. And the Applejack, which we never talked about in the story, but it was never relevant, so I never did. And that's just, like, that's just some of the design concerns that you have to think about when you're doing this sort of thing. And, like, some of it, like, I understand, and some of it's just kind of, like, whatever. Like, the sort of implication of at least the Hoof is the Hoof isn't terribly big. It's just deadly. Like, you could, in theory, walk to any part of the Hoof in a couple of days at the longest, but you would die on through the effort because everything is trying to kill you. You know, I think is sort of the explanation, especially because, like, the path of least resistance is the going through the core, and the core will just kill you for going into it. Like, you just get vaporized by defense lasers.
Which does bring up, like, again, how the fuck do they ship this food anywhere? How the fuck does this food get from anybody to, like...
They have ice, is the best explanation I can think of. And if you go, well, how do they have ice? I would point out that this is a setting that has magic. And there are people who can just do, like, ice spells. Yeah. Anyways, we get into, like, the other big thing that this chapter brings up as a thing that explores... Which, like, I'm on the fence of, because, again, it's an interesting concept that I think is executed kind of poorly in the story. But BJ has a conversation with everybody, and she's like, all right, cool, we're going to Hightower. And they're like, we almost died. We need to take a break. And she's like, no, cool. No, no, I don't, oh, we gotta go. We just, we gotta go, gotta do. And like, everyone's kind of concerned about BJ because like, it's kind of revealed in this chapter that she apparently doesn't need to sleep anymore. Like her just, her, she's got enough cyber in her that she just don't, no longer needs to sleep. She's just like, nope, like I can just keep going and keep going. And, there's a kind of concern of the rest of the crew is like, boy, Blackjack, you are going to burn us out to death. And there's a huge, plot line for a couple of chapters of like, basically the, like, it's going to sound really dumb, but there's a long storyline about Blackjack trying to take a nap. She doesn't need to sleep anymore, combined with the fact that she now, like, anytime she tries to rest is, like, plagued with horrible nightmares because of all the things that have happened to her up to this point. So she doesn't even want to sleep. She doesn't even want to try. There is she talks with Rampage about this because Rampage is in a similar predicament where she doesn't need to sleep unless she wants to. And we get another cool backstory thing that would be great if Rampage wasn't awful. Where she's like, because if you just let this, like, come with me for a second. If you just let this grok without thinking about all the stupid, she has multiple personalities garbage, she's like, oh yeah, I didn't sleep for a while. And Blackjack's like, how'd that go? Well, I don't remember much of that time, but for a while there was a local horror legend called the Beast of Oofington that would go around killing everything, and I was probably that for a while.
Yes.
And I love that as a concept that, like,
I'm here for it.
Like, because Rampage is old and she just doesn't bother to remember every single detail of her life. Like, there's just a gap of time where she might have been a cryptid for a while. Is really amusing to me. It always gets muddied by the fact that, like, Rampage is just, like, also very stupid.
The character is incredibly muddied and not well... not well addressed, and the joke would really work because she's very badly developed and like she's seven different concepts that would be great on their own. That's one reason this is bad. The other thing is that this joke would really work. This joke would be best served and land really well if before going into like near the center of a thing. Somebody had warned against, like, if the Beast of Hoofington was something that came up earlier in this.
Yeah, story, it was an established concept.
As an established, like, cryptid that everybody's worried about and nobody ever sees. Especially if it's before we actually meet Rampage. And then this question comes up. Have you ever heard of... And her response is, I went through a period where I just didn't sleep at all. How'd that go? Have you heard of the Beast of Hoofington?
Yeah, you're totally right. Like I said, though, I still think it's an interesting idea. Like, I just like the idea of, like, I like, so, like, one of the things that I'm always charmed of about immortal characters is I like the idea that, like, every couple of decades, they just become a wildly different person out of boredom in some cases. Like, Rampage... My headcanon of Rampage, if you're ignoring all her dumb personality bullshit, is that, like, the only reason why she's, like, being a nice person right now is purely because she isn't one most of the time, and this is kind of, like, a charming, like, this is a quaint diversion from, like, being a nihilistic nightmare that kills everyone all the time. Also in this chapter, we get, like, the Rampage, like, officially severs ties with the Reapers, and she's just pure team Blackjack now, on grounds that Blackjack amuses her more, which again would be a great idea if Rampage was a better character. But we also get a scene where Blackjack is starting to lose it, and she's having a tea party with a bunch of figurines, which doesn't really matter, but it's so that Lacuna can show up and Blackjack can, like, beg her to, like, help. And Lacuna basically be like, well, the goddess doesn't want to help you anymore, so I can't. And at that point, like, what that should have meant is that then she just teleported out of the story forever. But, like, she just kind of meanders in the plot for a while after this point. Because, like,
Why is she at all beholden to, like, the hive mind, actually?
Because she is a complicated, tangled ball of emotions and not really a person, at any point the goddess can just, like, pull that thread and she just ceases to exist at any time.
Would she care, though?
Lacuna? Because she cares about having a sense of identity.
Oh, okay. I guess. I mean, like, if the instinct, the compulsion to have an ego and cherish that is something that's suppressed in all other alicorns, then I guess that would be a characteristic she possesses. But then again, like, I don't know, just a bad character. it's just bad. Fuck it. Like, table flip.
Like, why bother?
I could think about this, but this is the product of a moron.
Yeah.
So, like, none of this is going to be internally consistent.
I think Lacuna is still fine, but the problem, again, is the problem that always happens with this story is characters get their moments in the spotlight way too late for you to give a shit. Like, it takes chapters and chapters before, like, Lacuna's, like, actual, like, arc reaches any sort of, like, important relevance. Because, like, that thing I just told you kind of just sort of comes up close to the end of her thing, where it's, like, it's not done well, but the idea is supposed to be that hanging out with Blackjack has given her more attachment to her sense of identity in general, because she wants to be the, like, person that she is because of the people that, like, she's friends with now. Like, she wants to remain herself, even though that herself is a complete lie made of nothing, because of the friends she's made, which, like, would key into the core themes of this fucking setting. But it takes so long for it to happen, and then it's, like, finale is such shit. Like, oh, man. If you want to talk about, like, things that personally make me grumpy about this setting, it's Lacuna's arc in general. But I like the idea, at least, of a character who, like, isn't a person, is made a person by her experiences around other people, because she's just a bundle of... She's bundled and twined together newspapers for a soul, and she's developed an identity out of that, but, like, knowing that at any time her, like, oversoul, like, her the thing, the hive mind she's connected, could just, like, snap that twine and she just ceases to exist again, is a terrifying concept. Like, that's a genuinely nightmarish concept to me personally. It's the same thing that I said, like, I hate how this hive mind is presented, but the concept of the goddess being less a hive mind and more a terrifying authoritarian identity that at any time completely subsumes your own, like, personality and takes you over is terrifying to me personally. Which I think part of the reason why I like Lacuna so much despite her failings. In the same way that, like, I like Rampage despite her failings. I like Blackjack despite, like, somber shit writing. Is that, like, there's, like, a kernel of what I would like to see out of the characters. It's just that they're executed so poorly. But yeah.
Meanwhile, like, I'm starting to realize, like, all of the, like, failed ground, like, here, like...
Sorry, failed with what?
Even, all of the failed potential, all of the, like, the degree to which the ball has been dropped on this character. Because... Wouldn't Lacuna have, like, extreme leverage on the goddess? Like, yes, the goddess can, like, oh, yeah, you can negate my existence at any time. But, two things. One, all of the rebellious impulses that, like, help maintain your shit, are trapped in me. So, an innate part of my nature is that I hate you. Also, if you do this, if you negate my existence, all that I am is dispersed in your precious, perfect, crystalline hive mind. Do you want that? Do you want to have me back? as a part of your composition? I don't think you do.
I think my counterpoint to that would be that she could just instantly make another at any time. And, like, that has no real leverage. Like, I guess that'd be, like, my way... Like, I guess, like, if I was writing that would be my way of solving that concept. Like, you could have that confrontation of, like, I will literally love bomb you to death if you try to touch me. And then the goddess goes like, whatever, I could just make like a dozen of you. Like, you were a band-aid that I never bothered removing. Like, because that would really sell the like nightmarish horror of like.
Yeah. I mean, that's the counter way of doing it. But like, I'm starting to realize that there's a lot of interesting stuff long-term to have in the idea of that. The goddess has made herself a goddess, and in order to maintain this perfect order and perfect control, she has accidentally produced for herself a devil.
Yes.
Into hell. Like,
it would be cool if Lacuna was the main character or something, you know?
And like, more like, I guess we can move on because this is entirely pointless. This is entirely pointless speculation for a story that may never get written. But like,
stay tuned for our fanfic podcast, where we talk about all of the things we would do if we were in Sombra's shoes.
In a potential interesting story, wherein like this entity like makes itself into God, and then realizes that in part of doing like part of the necessary ingredients for that, it accidentally involved creating a devil. And when the devil like puts their cards on the table, like I could just make a new one. I could keep doing that. Yeah. You'll keep burning through your limited supply of bodies to produce new entities that will inevitably present you with this challenge again, or you could negotiate.
Yeah. Anyways, a much better story would have been that. I guess if any of you are ever, like, any of you would-be writers are ever planning on writing an Alicorn story, there is your premise. Boom.
I now like Lacuna a lot more now that I've realized, oh, wait a minute. She's the devil.
She's literally a ball of anarchy. WTF, I love Lacuna now. But yeah, we're almost done this chapter, thankfully. We've been rambling quite a bit. But the last big thing is they're like, okay, fine, Blackjack. They wake up, they have their rest or whatever, they have their break. And they're like, okay, fine, Blackjack, we'll go with you to go to like to Hightower. And they like see the Harbingers on the horizon waiting for them, and they're like, okay, Blackjack's like, okay, so here's my plan. All of you split up. I'll go by myself. You guys go, and I'll meet you up with you in a different location. Because they only want me. They only care about me. They won't attack you guys. And so they like make the plan to like to meet back up after they deal with, like, after she deals with Hightower, and they like break on that. And then the chapter ends with her running out into the distance amidst gunfire. So, yay, we're getting solo Blackjack stories for, like, a huge chunk of this story.
Okay.
If you didn't like the companion bloat, don't worry, it doesn't matter anymore for a huge chunk.
I have mixed feelings. I hate all of these people, except for the shadow of what they could be instead. Like that's why I've said it in previous chapters, but I am now completely married to my headcanon of like, what Fi is discussing. Like the most interesting version of this character is focusing on like total immortality, somebody who's been around since before the war and does not know how to die, is completely indestructible, and the psychological consequence of that, narrowing in on that character, the old lady who's been was a saint for a while, as cryptid for a time. Got married that one time for
had
a
kid,
while.
Crushed that kid.
And also like the dark comedy of like Like our in jokes about her, the dark comedy of like having somebody around, like having somebody that you're friends with, and you're like, oh yeah, no, good friend, don't let children around her. She will crush them.
She just needs a big old keep out of reach of children sticker on her forehead. But yeah, that was my immediate thought. It's like, well, I hate all of you, but I hate Blackjack's solo stories even more. So I'm kind of torn.
Now I get it why I'm sad. They're at least fun to talk about. It's at least funny.
Don't worry. We're going to get a whole new batch of brand new temporary companions. That's the kicker. We get a whole new batch, and that keeps happening. That happens like three more times.
Jeez, spoilers.
It's amazing. Like just before we go, I just want to just talk about that insanity. That like one of the biggest complaints about the story is massive companion bloat, and I feel like that like Sombra's solution to that is insane. It's like, well, if you don't like all these companions, well, fuck it. Blackjack will go on her own way, make her own story. Blackjack and hookers. Also, a dozen more new companions you have to sit through. It's fucking insane. Absolute mad lad.
I think the most important thing we can take away from this chapter is you'll be missed, Conquest Gluten.
Oh, rest in peace. Rest in peace.
Horse Kropotkin.
Oh, why is it so good? But yeah, so I guess, is there anything better we could be reading or experiencing, Weird?
Nothing.
You got nothing?
I got nothing. My health hasn't been good enough that I've been able to,
consume media.
Yeah. One Punch Man is still pretty good. Remember One Punch Man?
Yeah.
It was from a while back, still pretty good. Still going on in manga form. Yep. Anime, not so much. The second season of the anime, you can go right ahead and skip it. I think the real sad thing is that its biggest crime is that it's mundane.
Yeah.
Is that it doesn't have a brilliant director at the helm, here to put in the hours, way more hours than he's being paid for, and therefore he doesn't have a team of up and coming hotshots who are chomping at the bit to work with a legendary director.
It's actually champing at the bit. It's actually champing at the bit, by the way. I found this out, and I have to needle everybody that ever says chomping at the bit now because of it. It's a curse.
So what even is champing at the bit?
I haven't the slightest clue. I just know that it's champing at the bit and not chomping.
But lingual drift. It's now there's some archaic concept of chomping a bit, but champing a bit. But chomping is immediately you can visualize that.
Yeah, I know. This is kind of just a digression.
Stop me from chomping the bit. Fine.
I will champ the bit then. But yeah, I'm gonna give. I guess not even a recommendation, but a follow up. Where I said, I was like, hey, I'm checking out a new fic on recommendation from somebody called Red 36, and I've gone through about two chapters now, and it's painfully average. It's not bad, which is a shocker with this community. It's just incredibly average. It's about a similarly gambling themed protagonist named Roulette who is going on an adventure just after the post original Fallout Equestria story, and she has a huge vendetta against the Enclave, which already makes me on her side, and it's a toss up between her trying to lead a new life within the NCR, which is the new Canterlot Republic, and trying to take revenge against the Enclave who murdered her family. And it's a simple story, but guess what? With this shit, with Project Horizons, I will take any simple fucking story over this crap. So, like, I'm looking forward to reading more of it. It's, like, it's only had, like, 20 chapters or so. So, like, it'll be a breeze to bro through. The other recommendation I will make is the, like, nightmarish, mimetic hellscape that my entire Discord server has been experiencing over the last couple of days, called Fucked Up Hell Building, which is the lurid tale of a nightmarish tabletop game that is so convoluted it's actually hilarious.
I'm given the impression it's either a LARP or some sort of online thing, based on the fact that it required multiple GMs to operate.
Yes, it is essentially the story of everything that could possibly go wrong in a tabletop without killing somebody. It's frankly amazing if you enjoy garbage. Like, if you're here, I assume that you enjoy garbage, consuming garbage to some degree. Like, you enjoy atrocity tourism. So, like, I would strongly recommend it. It is somber-esque in its tone. And that makes me smile. Otherwise, that's my recommendations. Fucked Up Hell Building. And also, I'll keep bringing on my book reports.
All right. So check out Fi on Twitter at ThouArtFi. I'm at on Twitter at WeirdingtonE. Email me with your questions and so forth at Weirdington Esquire. That's WeirdingtonESQ at gmail.com.
It's important to remember that my Twitter is, like, really not safe for work. So, like, nobody under 18, please. Don't make both of us criminals.
Yeah, mine is essentially safe for work. A long while back, I favored it. I clicked the like button on a few not safe for work things, but I've since stopped doing that. And because when you like things, they sometimes show up in people's feeds.
Yeah, which is because Twitter is a well-designed website that's great for usability.
Which is weird. Like, if I wanted other people to see it, I would retweet it.
Yes.
Shout out to Buy Horsepool for a Horsepool for rating and reviewing us on iTunes. Horsepool has some glowing things to say, which is notable because in order for them to come up with the username Horsepool, they must have made it pretty far in.
Yeah, that's kind of amazing. Thanks for that. I'll have to go check out that review. What else we got to plug? Donate to Weirdington's Ko-Fi for one-time donations. We will eventually get a Patreon bonus episodes up for things. I definitely think the first one is going to be not a live play, but definitely a review of the Fallout Equestria tabletop game. We will break it down into the myriad of reasons of why it sucks. And bad, and why you should just, like, hack Apocalypse Worlds if you're going to be playing FOE RPG stuff, which, I mean, probably only a small percentage of people even listening to this will care about that, but those of you that do, you know, may find that interesting. Other than that, though, I think that is the rest of our episode. So, Weird, do you want to play us out?
Not especially, but it does mean that we get to end the podcast for the day. And that's a thing I'm here to do, because... If I've ever thought this might have all been a terrible mistake...